You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Imagine securing your first home with your partner, achieving a dream you'd been striving for all your life. You get the keys and set foot inside your new abode, and as you look around feeling optimistic as to what you and your partner's future holds, it seems everything is not as perfect as it seems. Hiding, lurking, watching, lays something else. A presence, an essence of the other world, that would soon come to make sure Keith Linder and his partner Tina definitely knew they were not alone. Keith joins me in the first of a two-part interview as he explains their first 2 years in the bothel home infested with a malevolent poltergeist. The second part will air later in the spring. But before that, as always, you can support Mysteries and Monsters by signing up at patreon.com/mysteriesandmonsters. $4 a month gets you ad-free episodes, guaranteed early releases, bonus content, and more. A big thank you to my latest patrons, David, Corinne, and Shane. Thank you for joining the team. Thank you for your support. And thank you to everybody else who currently sponsors the show through Patreon. It really is appreciated. Thank you. Mysteries and Monsters is across all social media platforms. And please subscribe to the Mysteries and Monsters channel on YouTube. You can also visit mysteriesandmonsters.com for episodes, merchandise, and more. Thank you as always to Dean Bestel for his marvellous artwork. The show is produced by Brennan Storr of the Ghost Story Guys. And Mysteries and Monsters is delighted to be a part of the Straight Up Strange network. After you hear Keith, you'll be eagerly awaiting the second part later in the spring. So let's take a trip and welcome the Bothell Hell House. Some people view the poltergeist phenomenon as something rarely reported in this modern era, but cases are clearly still occurring. One such incredible case occurred to one couple, which covered such a range of phenomena that it will blow you away. It seems not everything is sleepless in Seattle. Keith, welcome to Mysteries and Monsters, sir.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
It's an absolute pleasure, Keith. When I first heard you speak 3 or 4 years ago, which seems like a million years ago after everything that's gone on in the last few years, I had to say I just could not believe what I was hearing. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I'm obsessed with poltergeist cases throughout history. And when I heard you interviewed on a couple of other shows, my jaw hit the floor, Keith.
Yeah, I mean, imagine me, Tina, and we'll talk about that relationship tonight or today. I always tell people I'd never had interest in the paranormal, if that makes sense. You know, I never followed it. I knew of the term poltergeist. You know, I seen the movie ages ago, but I never gave it a second thought afterward. You know, I heard a few ghost stories from friends, you know, you're at the campsite telling ghost stories, or it's Halloween or things of that nature. But when it happens to you, to the individual, to me, it's almost unreal, surreal. There's a denial component first when the activity started erupting or happening in the Bothell home, because it just seemed to be, you know, we thought we were being pranked or somebody was doing a joke on us, or we had moved into a home that was part of some reality TV show or Twilight Zone pilot episode or something.
Yeah.
Because things just don't levitate and fly. I mean, they do in movies, you know, but there's a special effects team that's behind that.
Yeah.
But we saw that, and when you see that sitting on your couch while drinking a cup of coffee or making toast in your kitchen, it changes you inside. It changes the mental, and it rearranges your worldview instantly. And I always tell people, you realize we humans, me in particular, living it, we're not at the top of the food chain, if you will. When we thought we were, even I'm talking about intellectually, capability, you know, we live with the confines of the laws of physics that we understand, and we have to obey them or we pay a heavy price. You know, I can't go jump off Mount Everest and walk away from that. But these things, man, they do circles around you. So it was very unexpected. Yeah.
I know when you write the introduction to the first book, there is this kind of picture perfect element that you create for the reader, where you and Tina have managed to work your way through life and get yourself this lovely house in the suburb of Bothell, which is just outside of Seattle. You're clearly delighted to be getting the keys. You've been looking forward to this moment for as long as you'd seen this house on Craigslist, I think it was, Keith, when you'd spotted it.
Yeah.
For you to get there, look at this house. I know there's a sentence in the opening chapter when you mention the fact that it was built the year you moved to the area, which I think, as someone who would be excited, thrilled, a little bit nervous, obviously, getting a four-bedroom house, taking big steps in the real world and you know, putting some roots down somewhere as pretty and as lush as it is around there. I would imagine that until the landlord left you and Tina with that bottle of wine, you probably thought you'd got everything you wanted at that perfect moment, Keith. You thought, this is it. Life is on the up.
Yeah, I have arrived. The dream of moving to Seattle in 2005, a few years before I moved into the Bothell, was 2012. So you think of all that space in between. And I had taken on a new job promotion. I was transitioning, left a phenomenal company to go to another phenomenal company, but I was moving up the corporate ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Tina had been together already 2 years, but we had separate place of residence. So it was, we felt, hey, it's, you know, I felt more importantly, you know, let's take our relationship to the next level. Let's keep it progressing.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the house. We went through the whole routine of house searching online, Craigslist, and we made a game. It was fun. We made a game of you find a house, I find a house, and we both have to like it or we won't even look at it.
Yeah.
And she would veto my houses. And like, oh, that'll never work. And I would veto her house. Oh, that'll never work. And then we saw this Bothell house. We were like, hey. It was like, okay. So I emailed the owner. He replied. We set up an appointment to go tour it, but we had made up our minds before we even saw the house physically that we wanted it. So it was really just a routine just to go see it, because the pictures online and everything was like, it was everything we wanted.
Yeah.
So when we saw it, you know, I was just going through the motions. And I remember we left after seeing it. I emailed the guy right away, said we want it. And it was interesting. His reply was very interesting to me, because he's like, well, it's not ready yet, but you know, we'll give me about a month or so, about a 6 weeks or whatever. This is when we saw it on Craigslist. And then I'll get back in touch with you when the house is ready to be moved in. And so I was like, okay, all right. And then when he contacted us, we were ready. I was wrestling. We was okay, we're ready to go. And then when we went to go get the keys or sign the papers, if you will, happy-go-lucky day, waking up, you know, coffee, we're going to ride together. And, I mean, if this was put on a screen somewhere, you could almost say mentally we were like skipping and hopping to the house.
Yes.
You know, it was a beautiful day. Beautiful
birds were
May
singing.
Day. Birds were singing, the squirrels, you know, cats living with dogs, dogs living with cats, you know. Everybody's getting along, and the deers are waving at us as we're coming by. And getting, you know, that's how the day was.
Yeah.
The grass is green. And lo and behold, just imagine, and the listeners can imagine too, just lo and behold, what the other side is thinking and doing. The side that we can't see, you know, they either must be salivating or chomping at the bit, talking about Mr. and Mrs. Poltergeist here, as we walk through the door. And, you know, we have our plans. Me and Tina have our plans. And they're innocent plans, not nefarious. But on the unseen side, the side we can't see that's about to reveal itself to Keith and Tina, they're thinking or saying, we want them. Yeah. Okay, it's on. Yeah, these are the people we're gonna hunt, and we're gonna hunt right away. You know, and one of the things I read in other Portuguese cases, we start experiencing phenomena, and we didn't even have property moved in yet. This is the day we went to go get the keys and sign the leasing paper, where we heard the infamous kid cough. You know, the homeowner had left. We're sitting on the floor, empty house. Nothing is there. House is empty, except for us and a ball of wine. And out of the blue comes that kid cough. Now, we don't have children. Children never lived or moved in with us. House is empty. All the windows are closed. This noise, this kid cough was very distinct. You can distinguish it. And it sounded like a kid cough, a young boy kid cough. And it interrupted our conversation. That's how loud and noticeable it was, because Tina stopped, I stopped. And we looked at each other and we asked each other at the same time, I kid you not, was that a kid cough? You know, was a rhetorical question. And we looked around, gazed around, thought it was very weird. But we had no paranormal knowledge or IQ of the paranormal. And nobody leaps to the ghost conclusion even with that. But it was so real. But we were, what I tell people, we were so house high that we didn't go to investigate. I didn't go upstairs to look where the noise, because I knew where the noise came from upstairs. I didn't go and research and investigate. Why would I? The house is empty. And we shrugged it off. We're like, oh, okay. Must have been something outside or whatever, or we misheard or something. But it did not deter us from wanting the house. We didn't run down the street chasing the landlord as he's pulling out. You know, so probably should have.
Yeah, well.
But and then you fast forward, we're moving in. A week later, 2 weeks later, moving in. I moved in first, and then things started coming up missing.
I think often, Keith, when people know about a particular poltergeist case or they've read about them in the past, I think when you look at some of the most famous ones, there's usually a real sort of, people can live in a property for quite a while. Your case is quite unique in the ones that hit the headlines and that have been well reported over the years, because as you've just said, there's no teenagers living in this house, there's no kids, there's no the usual kind of fuel to create this kind of environment that paranormal investigators will always tell us that poltergeist cases usually center on a teenager. More often than not, they will be of a female persuasion, but there are plenty of young boys that have had poltergeists attached to them as well. So, as you said, you are a man that's worked in IT. You are not someone who has any interest or knowledge or longing for this particular subject. So I think most people that first day, if they hear a random cough somewhere, that, like you and Tina do, Keith, you'll brush it off. And then clearly you've got the bit where, you know, you're easing yourself in, you get in there. Now, it seems to say, this guy seems a bit keen. Let's keep him on his toes, because often when people misplace things or things disappear, it's something they don't use every day. And I think, was it your car keys that disappear first of all?
Yeah, it was the extra pair or set. You know, when I buy a car, they give you two, right? So it was the ones that I never used, but I kept them in a glove box in my closet at my previous residence. And I got other important documents in there, passport, things of that nature, birth certificate, all that. So I keep it in this little glove box. And I walked that over. I mean, I carried that over. The movers didn't touch that. You know, stuff like that you don't give to the movers. So it was small enough I could put it in a box of my own and carry it to my new house. And I did. But I remember when I did that, you know, I took a mental inventory of everything, all the contents therein, and I see the keys there. It was only, I think, a few days or few weeks when I went to go retrieve another item out of that same glove box that I noticed my key fob was gone. And I knew then immediately, I'm like, wait a minute. I saw this key fob, you know, a few weeks ago. I never used it. You know, I still have my primary key fob, and it's gone. And then I was like, okay, well, that's weird. Tina doesn't even know this key fob existed. Why would she? And it was in my office, and I remember sort of admonishing myself, because I was like, Keith, you don't lose things, but you lost that. Shame on you. How could you lose something like that? But I brushed it off. Yeah. I brushed it off again. I was like, okay, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. Something I'm about to deal with later. But I brushed it off, and it didn't start dawning onto me that there was some there when Tina would come to me and say, Keith, have you seen my jewelry? Now, this is another thing. Like, Tina doesn't know that I keep an extra car key or something. She's never seen it. We live in places at the time, so why would she?
Yeah.
I'm the same way with her jewelry. I don't keep an inventory of Tina's necklaces and bracelets and whatnot. I like when she wears them, but that's about as far as I go.
Yep.
And she's like, hey, have you seen my this and this and that? In my mind, no, why would I? But no, Tina, I have not seen any of that stuff. And then we both thought it was interesting, but we're still not connecting the dots. We still don't know. We're being haunted as we speak. You know, the perimeters or the fences being drawn. And what raised it even more was the weirdness was when we started finding things in the home that neither of us owned. And I'm talking about the kid toys.
Yeah.
Now, these kid toys are very interesting because we're finding them out in the open. Okay. We just moved into this house. It's only us two. Number one, we don't have kids, so we'll scratch that off again. But we're finding kid toys put on the kitchen counter, on the staircase, and on coffee tables and lamp tables, things that we brought into the house. So now there are kid toys on things that we brought in after we moved in, and we don't have kids. And these are little, and even the toys themselves, they are a little bit outdated. You know, they're not toys you would run into Toys R Us and buy, then bring it to kids at Tina's house. These toys have a little bit of age on them. And we thought that was interesting. And we're like, well, and I'm like, okay, maybe the family before us had kids. But even if that was true, and it was, it still doesn't explain why we're finding kid toys on the staircase. You know how many times we've been up and down this staircase since we moved in? The movers have gone out, just us. There's kid toys on Tina's coffee table. There's kid toys on the kitchen counter.
Yeah.
And it became such a frequent event. We had a drawer that we put them in the kitchen because we didn't know what to do. We're like, well, okay, that's a riddle. We didn't trash them away or whatever. We're just like, oh, okay, let's just see how far this accumulates, you know, how much. And I was then thinking, okay, somebody's coming in after we go to bed and leaving these kid toys. So this is some sort of prank or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it means or where they're going with this. But even that sounds crazy when you think about it. Now, who's coming in somebody's house in the middle of the night leaving toys? It's against the law and what? I mean, nobody's doing that.
Yeah.
But we have to think that first. We have to rule that out. So we do that. I go a step further being the IT guy. I go in and have the home security system updated. State of the art. Bam, 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 bam. Doors, windows, garage door, everything. Here's teenager code to get in. Here's my code to get in, da, 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 da. We go to bed. I turn on the motion sensors because it's a two-story home, so we slip upstairs.
Yep.
Most of these toys being found downstairs. So if anybody's coming in, they're going to trip something. We got them. Ha-ha, we got you. Never happened. But that did not stop finding kid toys and then waking up finding the kitchen cabinet doors open. You wake up in the morning and you see all the cupboards open. And we're like, whoa, okay. But I can tell you, the day the moment of truth emerged, where we could not deny anymore, and when it was pure evident that this house was haunted, was the day we were watching a movie together on the couch, me and Tina. And we were watching a movie. It was a weeknight. And Tina has this plant. It's about 4 foot tall plant, artificial plant. She sat it next to the entertainment center. And it darted up in the air. And we were sitting shoulder to shoulder. We saw it at the same time. And it darted up in the air. It spun. And it did a 360-degree spin. And then it fell off to the ground in our direction. And we saw that. And I always tell people I was so glad, still am, that Tina was there to see it at the same time I was. And vice versa. And I remember we got up we looked at each other, we got up, and we were like, okay, that's where, okay, this has got to be some sort of joke or being done by remote control device or, and we really thought somebody was going to come into the house. I don't know where they're coming from, but be like, ha ha, you guys are on da 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 TV show. Congratulations. You know, you made the pilot episode or whatever. We really thought, okay, this is where the balloons start falling down.
Yep.
And you bring us in on the joke. Because right now we're the butt of the joke. Where are you going to bring us in now? Didn't happen. Okay. Tina rummages through the plant. There's no wire. There's no remote control device. And I think I looked at Tina. I like, I think our house is haunted. You know, I'm just going to say it. I think it's haunted. And we're like, well, how can you tell our house is haunted? I mean, besides this, how can you tell? And we marched up to my office and we went on Google and we were like, type in, how can you tell your house is haunted? And all these websites came up and we like looked at it and read them. And they all pretty much said the same thing, which was everything I've just told you so far, Paul, was on these websites. How can you tell if your house is haunted? Number one, missing items. Got things missing, jewelry, silverware. Things of that nature, car keys. I'm like, oh, okay, check that box off. Finding items that neither of you own, da 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 da, trinkets, kid toys, da 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 da. I'm like, oh, got that box light off. Strange noises, footsteps, kitchen cupboards open. I'm like, oh. And then I forgot who said it. I think Tina or I said it was, I think we got a kid ghost. Because now we're rewinding in our head all the things. We're like, oh, that's what that kid cough was about. Yeah. Because the website was like, yeah, strange noises. Some of you even said kid call. Yeah, but that was back in May. It's in July now. We're like, oh, and then the toys. So we even, so okay, oh, okay, we got a kid ghost. And we're like, okay, that's not, it's weird, but it's not demonic or crazy so far. And Tina looked at me, I looked at her, like, okay, kid ghost. It was like, well, what do we do if you got a kid goes, they're like, well, you got to talk to them and be nice and gingerly. And number one, ask them why they're here, what they want, but really want to talk them out of the house. You really want to tell them to go into the light and be at peace and be at rest. And this is our home now, but you got to do it in a nice voice. And we did. So we printed out instructions and we're reading them. I don't know who we're reading them to, but we're just walking around the house reading them. Paul, and I can tell you then, I believe there's something that triggers, I guess a milestone has been reached in poltergeist, I don't know, ethics or whatever, because once we realized or came to the realization that we were not alone in the home, they, meaning Mr. and Mrs. Poltergeist, start upping the antics.
Yeah.
And the antics started getting malevolent.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think when you look at the first couple of months, as you say there, you could kind of brush it off. I think it's very interesting, and I know you mentioned this several times in the book, when you look back at what was going on, how you explain things away, because as you say, to have the realization that you are more convinced that someone is breaking into your house to prank you, or that you're on some kind of secret television show where you're being set up for other people's entertainment, it's one of those things that people, I think, would be surprised that you would think. But then again, as you say, you've no interest in the paranormal. You're not one of those people that leapt from naught to 100 and went from I don't know much to oh, our house is definitely haunted. It's only when you witness this thing with the plant and
yeah.
As I said, it's almost like there's this acceleration, and it seems very gentle, very sort of playful at the beginning, even though, you know, losing personal items is more annoying than anything else. But
yeah,
as you say, and I know you've just referred to it there, do you think that the fact that you guys both suddenly came to the conclusion we're haunted meant that all of a sudden not only did whoever else was in the vicinity think now we can have some fun, but you then started to look at these strange incidents that you were brushing off as, you know, maybe Tina's come down in the middle of the night sleepwalking and left the cupboard doors open, or maybe we've just dropped that and we didn't realize it was there, or maybe I've thrown the forks away and I just didn't realize.
We entertained those thoughts briefly, Paul. I look at Tina, she looked at me. It was good that we had been dating for 2 years already.
Yep.
And we sort of knew each other. mannerisms day or night. I never took Tina for a sleepwalker,
mm-hmm.
but I did entertain the thought. And but what I was how I was able to rule that out immediately was the alarm system set up. You know, even if you well, somebody what well, she went downstairs and turned the alarm off. And okay, well, yeah, as I said, the alarm system keeps a log of everything.
Yeah.
So if somebody goes down and turns it off, there's a timestamp for that. You don't erase your culpability by just turning something off.
Mm.
The alarm is going to log it. So it says 1:48 a.m. log was manually turned off. Oh, you know, I didn't turn it off. Tina, did you turn it off? Oh, no, I didn't turn it off. Well, there's cameras too. The camera doesn't show Tina leaving the room. Doesn't show Tina going down the stairs. So you can't do all that.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, we have to run, me and Tina have to run through these very quickly, these plausible denials of, okay, maybe it's, and the denials, looking back, they are so crazy. Like, nobody's coming in our house, sprinkling Tidcoy toys around while we're sleeping. You know, I mean, that's just, I mean, but it's funny that we have to entertain that thought because the only alternative is the alternative that the road we don't want to go down, you know? It's like trying to get out of this neighborhood and all the road that's open to you to get out, to make it to the highway is the one full of zombies. So you go through all these other roads and it's dead end, tree is flooded out. And your only alternative is this one left. So finally, the only alternative for us, and they sort of helped us, the levitation of the plant. And we both saw that in plants, I don't care what planet or continent you live on, plants don't levitate.
No.
Okay? They need something to help them, string or whatever. This thing levitated, it darted up, and not only that, it spun. And we saw that. And then it fell to the ground. If it had just been sitting there and fell over, there's ways to explain that. That would be weird, but there's ways to like, okay, that's weird, but it could have, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But nothing is going to explain the levitation and the spinning.
No.
Okay. And I think why, and like I said, a milestone was reached because it was that point that we realized that we were not alone and that the house was haunted. And we changed, whether we don't know it or not, me and Tina, we changed now. Oh, we got a ghost now. Oh. Okay, we're being watched constantly or something. And now we're semi-interacting because the instructions say talk to it.
Yep.
We weren't talking to anything before. We didn't have any reason to. So now I'm talking to the ether, the air around me. I don't know who I'm talking to. I could be talking to the devil himself. I don't know. But my instructions are telling me to say, go into the light. Give me my keys back. So whatever's on the receiving end is hearing that now. They're like, aha. Okay, it's game on. Because I believe there's a level of participation. There's an unwillingness participation or subconsciously or unknowledgeable participation, but it's participation nonetheless. You're participating.
Yes.
And when we go Google how to get rid of a house full of ghosts, we're participating. We're telling the poltergeists who are living there, we don't want you here. And they're like, well, we want to be here.
Yeah.
We've been here before too. And that's where the dance starts. The dance, I call the activity. Now we're dancing. Yeah.
Well, the thing is, Keith, they weren't living with you. You'd gone in and moved in with them, hadn't you? So, you know, exactly. At the end of the day, you're in their house. I think that's how they...
That's how this, and they probably have some rights to say that because it's true, right? It's like, yeah. Hey, dude, you moved here May 1st. We've been here already. Yeah, you moved into our place. Why don't you leave? Yeah.
I think, obviously, it's weird how this haunting has these kind of addictions, it would seem, because it's moved from this. It then starts focusing on the plants. And you can tell when you read your books, Keith, that it's clearly gaining strength. Now, maybe, as you say there, once you came to the realization after what you saw, because as you say, I'm sure you've heard every potential explanation for the plant incident other than one that actually explains it. I'm sure because people say, well, you live in Washington State, it's probably an earthquake tremor that made it shake and look or you misremembered it, or you were perhaps, were you watching a frightening film and you were scared? I find sometimes an explanation is both deeply insulting to the witness and witnesses, as for yourself, and often ignores the evidence it can't disprove. And obviously, as you say, even here in Europe, Keith, plants don't levitate, buddy.
Right. Yeah, but you're right. Those are the explanations given when shared the story to other people of, was it a tremor? Was it an earthquake? No, but I'm glad you asked that question because I checked anyway and no, there wasn't. Mm. And even if it was, earthquakes don't make objects levitate. They fall over. They tremble and shake. The part y'all keep ignoring, me talking to somebody who might have a level of skepticism, is what part of levitation are you missing? Let's both... Do you understand what levitating means? When I say it darted up in the air,
yep.
I mean vertically. It's no longer on the ground.
Mm.
And to add insult to injury, it's doing a 300. It's spinning now.
Mm.
Spinning. Then it falls over.
Yeah.
Okay. And we could talk about how I fell over. That's another conversation. But let's don't ignore the levitation part. You know, that's some people try to gloss over or whatever. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating. I was, you know, I'm 53 now. I must have been 46, 47 then at the time. I know the distinguish between something that's affected by earthquake and something that's affected by, I don't know what the hell that is. So you insult me. Somebody has insulted me when they try to, well, you know, it's probably an earthquake. You insult, you know, me and my walk through life. I've been through life. I've been here 46 years now. I've seen all kind of things. I've lived all kind of things. I've read all kind of books. You know, I'm college grad, got an IT job, da 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 da. I could distinguish between earthquake and what this is.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm telling you what this is or what we saw is because I've already deduced all those. I've already ruled those out.
Yeah.
And so let's just start from the beginning of what could do that.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't know, you don't know. But there's a community that I didn't know existed that says this sounds like a poltergeist. And everything that they're talking about, the symptoms we're experiencing.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, obviously, when the plant incident occurs, you've then got, it seems to get addicted with throwing plants about, smashing them up and ruining, trying to cause problems for you. But also, it seems that at the same time, you really began to notice that you had been hearing weird noises. And these bangs start. Now, there's the whole banging sort of introduction to this weird ceiling fan that you'd got that seemed to be your 3 a.m. wake-up call. That seems, Keith, when I look at it, one of the most blatant examples of something trying to get somebody's attention, because the incident that it kind of makes you awake for isn't really related to the ceiling fan, is it?
No, it's not. They have no relationship whatsoever. There's really no rhyme or reason, except it's just happened. You know, Tina had a whole bunch of plants, God bless her, and those plants, and these were real, these weren't artificial,
yep,
that were just used like tennis balls in the house to where they would be thrown from one side of the room to the other. And going back to the very beginning of, what do you do with that? I mean, I'm eating dinner, I'm news, and this flies across the room, and it crashes upon impact when it hits the wall. Sometimes we witness that. Sometimes we respond to it because we're not in the room when it happens, and we just come in later and we see the destruction. Sometimes we're having dinner together and it happens. Sometimes we're watching a movie together and it happens. Sometimes Tina can be taking a bath or shower. I'll be in my office and it happens. And you're like, well, okay, what's the rhyme or reason of throwing plants around? You don't like plants? But it's not so much the plant, it's so much the attention of getting us out of our seat and going to see what it is. And then when we go to see what it is, our mouths drop open naturally. You know? And then we look up into the air or to the ether and say, cut that out.
Yeah.
Stop it. I go back to Google again and say, hey, how do you make ghosts stop throwing plants? And the websites, some to their credit, well, you got to tell them to behave. And if they're not going to play by your rules, then they're going to have to leave. You know, you've, it's like I'm it's like a, what they call a negotiator talking somebody off the ledge.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm talking to somebody and it's my house. I shouldn't even have to be having this conversation with you. But I feid like I have to be ginger with you, like kid gloves. And I learned later as you read the book, yeah. Because I'm talking to gingerly to this thing, and I'm feeling like, it's my house. And I was like, hey, just stop throwing plants, or else. But they know, or else what, Keith? Or else what? You know? So I got, hey, can you please stop throwing the plants? We appreciate it, you know? We can all get along if you not throw the plants, you know? But if you're going to throw the plants, then we're going to have to ask you to leave. And it just feels so silly for me to say that. But I do, and then they throw the plants anyway. And then I'm mad. Mm. You know, they throw another plant. Sometimes the same plant we just... You know, we put all the dirt back in, the roots and all that, and the plants all disheveled, and we're trying to save it. Tina's crying and bawling, and we're, like, trying to dress the plant back up, and we put it back on the mantle or something, and it gets thrown again the next day, you know?
Yeah.
But you brought something that was very interesting to me and Tina, that I think, and you know, we're talking about that the paranormal community hasn't really paid attention to is the ceiling fan.
Yeah.
In my bedroom. Every time there was activity, first it was, like I said, I would be awakened. We'd be awakened to the squeaking ceiling fan. And it's not like the ceiling fan was off and it came on while sleeping. The ceiling fan has been on all night.
Yep.
Okay. And around a certain time frame, some nights, not all, like I said, around 3 a.m., it would start squeaking loudly to where it wakes you up. You know, it was above our bed, the way we're positioned in the room, and it woke me up. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, why, if it's been on the majority of the night, why is it squeaking now?
Yeah.
Okay. Like, why now? But I later learned, and they're going to tell me. They're going to tell me why, because as soon as I'm looking at the squeaking ceiling fan, that's when an iron, I'm talking about the iron you iron your clothes with, or an ironing board that, you know, you set the iron on, or a can of starch, or a lamp by your bedside, that's when they get thrown.
Mm.
It was never really about items flying and being thrown as you're sleeping.
Yeah.
It's about items flying and being thrown after you wake up.
Yeah.
So it took a while for me to start to correlate the ceiling fan noise with activities about to jump off.
Yeah.
And it was the day I think I rose up out of bed. I was trying to fix this ceiling fan. I'm not an electrician or a ceiling fan, whatever. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm looking at it. I turn the light on. Tina's looking at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to see, why is it squeaking? And the bedroom door slams shut on its own while I'm looking at this ceiling fan. And further down the line, as the activity progresses, I mean, even in 2014, this is the part I think researchers should study, or it's good information for them. There would be days when the activity was high in the house, meaning total destruction, we're being bombarded, things are flying, things are all kind of, the house is crazy, to where if I was to march upstairs, and I did, just to confirm to me that they're here, all I had to do is go into my bedroom, and the ceiling fan that is off, turn it on. And there were times where I would turn it on, it would be squeaking.
Hmm.
Now, when the house is docile, peaceful, and quiet, you go and turn your ceiling fan on, no noise, no squeaking.
Yeah.
But when it's active and crazy, ceiling fan is squeaking. I believe there's an energy presence, or the barometric pressure in the house or whatever, they're there. I feel comfortable in telling the world, I can almost tell when they were ready to jump off by some of the subtle precursors that happened in around the house. Like I said, the popping noise coming from the walls. The walls were sometimes contracted. We hear the popping, the snapping was an indicator that the activity is about to jump off.
Mm-hmm.
The ceiling fan was a good indication of the activity about to jump off. There was never an instance where there was no squeaking and the house was active. The house was going to be active. You could turn the ceiling fan on. It's squeaking, I believe, because they're there. They're active. And other things in the house, you know, the fluctuation of the lights going off and on. And then sooner or later, bang, 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 or objects thrown, or explosion, or wires being yanked out the ceiling, and the bulbs, the bulbs explode because the pressure. You already know about the humming because you read the book about the humming noise the investigative team heard.
Yep.
When they responded to the house, I was humming, and me and Tina being living in the home, our ears were acclimated to the humming. We didn't notice it was humming until we stepped out. And then when we stepped out of the house and back in, we heard that humming noise.
What? I mean, this is all going on over your first sort of 4 to 5 months that you've been in there, both of you, Keith. At what point do you think we need to speak to somebody, anybody, that's going to take us seriously? Because I know before we started properly having talking about the contents of the book and what you've been through, you and Tina at that particular property, that some of the explanations you were given, I find if somebody came to me, yes, fair enough, I'm very open-minded, Keith, and I've got a deep interest in the supernatural and the paranormal. If somebody came to me and explained everything that was happening, the first thing I wouldn't say is, you've got raccoons in your attic.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think some people, not all, I think that's their way of dismissing, of not knowing that, well, if I don't have an answer to you, I'm going to give you a ridiculous answer.
Yes.
For them to save face, because you're right. Some said that and told us that. And going back, like I said, having raccoons in your house does not explain why a plant is levitating. I keep telling people that. What's this thing with raccoons all of a sudden? You know, it doesn't explain. Are you telling me the raccoons are opening up my kitchen cupboard tonight? Is that where we're going with, because that would be neat, you know. But I didn't come to a person and say, hey, when me and Tina go to sleep, we keep hearing pitter patter in the attic. That's not what I'm coming to you with. I'm coming to you with, hey, when me and Tina are watching TV or sometime we're having dinner, plants go flying around us. Okay. So, oh, you got raccoons in your attic. You know, and so I'm like, are we even talking about the same thing? Are you hearing what I'm telling you? I didn't say anything about the attic. To the credit of the attic, the attic, and we had one, was the least active room in the house. If there's any refuge, looking back now, hindsight being 2020, me and Tina should have sought refuge in the attic. That's the only place I can honestly say that I've never ventured up into the degree to where I can, you know, say nothing's going on up here. Now, we had loud bangs coming from the attic, but nothing to the point of raccoons, you know. But I'll take their, you know, advice or consideration or whatever and entertain the idea. I'll say, okay. Because I did eventually put cameras in the attic for a different reason.
Yeah.
But you're right. No, but that summer, 2012, we did reach out, not to paranormal teams yet. We reached out to churches. And the churches in and around Bothell, we wanted to have the house blessed. That was one of the advices given from the websites we had been to from family and friends is, okay, you want to bless the house, and you know this because I said in the book, I regretted not having the house blessed before we moved in. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, admonished all her grandchildren, wherever you live, have your house blessed before moving in, and I did everywhere else except Bothell, and I hated that, and it was on my mind, but it was something I never got to do. But and we had churches come by, and then we told them. You know, I felt that if you're a church and you're in the business of blessing houses, obviously you're part of the team, right? You're part of the believing community of spirits and whatnot, right? You're not blessing the house to keep it from getting raccoon infested. But, and they did. They would come to the home and they would bless every room and whatnot. And that would quell the activity for a day or two or 72 hours. And I'd be that. But the activity, 2012, like I said, it was a gradual buildup of, you know, items missing, items being found, loud bangs. And what's interesting about the loud bangs part is you can almost set your watch to them to the point to where it was always after 8 p.m. or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it shook the whole house. It shook the foundation of the house. And I tell people, well, how does it sound? I was like, it's a noise it's everywhere but nowhere.
Yeah.
It's everywhere but nowhere at the same time. Mm. You know, I could be in my office and Tina, she likes to read books in bed upstairs around that time of night. And we hear this boom, boom, boom. And we meet in the hallway. You know, the noise wasn't coming from upstairs. It's coming. We don't know where it's coming from. It feels like it's close to you, but far away.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'd be downstairs. I can be downstairs watching TV and Tina's upstairs and boom, boom, boom. Or sometimes we're both downstairs. Boom, boom, boom. And it shook the whole foundation of the house. Then the items started being thrown, small, medium, large. TV changing by itself. Leave a room with the light on, come back, it's off. Leave a room with the TV on, come back, the TV's off. Tina started getting scared because she would take a bath or a shower, and the door would slam.
Oh.
So like a Alfred Hitchcock movie where the door would slam while she's bathing.
Yes.
And the lights go off. Oh. You know, total scare. Freak me out.
Yeah.
And I'd be like downstairs, and I hear this, and I come running. And
yeah.
I was like, what happened? I was taking a shower and the door slammed and it slammed shut and the light went off. And then and so I was like, okay, we'll call the church tomorrow. We'll get them over here again. But I could tell you the day or it was night that I saw the gray lady.
Yes.
Blew my mind. Just blew. I mean, there's a lot of different levels of realism with this case that me and Tina are going to have to experience because they're going to be throwing stuff our way. This is a new, going back to the word milestone, this is a new milestone being reached where I try to paint this picture for people because I want people to understand. After everything that we've seen and experienced, I've told you so far, this is like August now, and we've responded to items being thrown, loud noises, electrical issues, and all that. We still don't have a face to this phenomenon. It has not dawned on us that we don't have a face to this phenomenon. Meaning, what does this phenomenon look like if it was a drawing on paper? I don't know. It's just, it's hard to describe. I don't know. It's invisible hands.
Mm.
The day I'm minding my own business in my office, doing what I normally do, Tina has a routine, I have my routine. I'm just in my office, upstairs, my man cave, whatever, typing away. Weeknight, Tina's taking a bath, and I'm at my computer desk, and the light in my office goes off, and I hear a click at the same time. It's a click, like click, you know, the switch. And I immediately look toward the direction of the light switch, which was at the doorway of the room where most switches are. And I look, and my brain is telling me, it's happening very fast, my brain is telling me, oh, Tina, cut it out. We agree. We don't play practical jokes on each other. We live in a house. So, yeah, I'm thinking in my brain, okay, Tina, we said we were not going to do practical jokes to each other.
Yeah.
And I turn towards the direction of the doorway, and I see a woman standing there, a woman that's not Tina. This woman is full-bodied. She's not see-through. She's not translucent. She's not omnibus. She's not emitting any radiant light. She's all gray. She's like gray matted color. But she's very well-defined. And she's standing, I don't know, 5-6 feet from me. I scoot my chair back. And my eyes are wide. And my brain is like, what? Whoa, there's a woman in my doorway. Now, what she did was she turned the light off, and the reason why I saw her so clearly is the hall light is on. So she's got a background that's helping me see her good.
Mm.
But she's just turned my light off, and she's facing sideways now, and she's trying to dart or get into the washroom, which the door is closed.
Yeah.
And I'm watching her, and she's manifesting in and out. She can't negotiate going through the door. And this is for y'all, you paranormal research, that she's not trying to open the door with her door, with the doorknob like you and I would to go in.
Yeah.
She's trying to go through the door, which tells any researcher out there, oh, they have this capability. We know that. Yeah, we know that. We've seen it. We've always theorized that. There's plenty of stories that support that. But now we see someone who's actually trying to carry it out.
Mm.
Now, what she's trying to do is, I believe, and why she's having a hard time completing it because she can't do it, is because I'm watching her.
Yeah.
I can see her. And it always bothers me, still does. Well, Mrs. Gray Lady, if you were going to turn off my light, which you did, why didn't you think your plan through enough to where you would have an escape plan? That's my thing. This is what gets me in trouble with Poltergeist, because I'm like, why didn't you, you know, who robs a bank and doesn't have a getaway car waiting for them on the outside? You know what I mean? Right? Yes.
Yeah.
No, we'll figure that out when we get to it. No, we won't. I'm not going to rob no bank with you. What's the getaway plan? So I'm looking at her, and she can't go through the door. And my brain is like, well, shouldn't you have known that before you start running around turning the lights off? I'm thinking that now. I wasn't thinking that then. But then, back then, I'm just shocked. I don't even know what I'm seeing.
Mm.
I can't even believe what I'm seeing. There's a woman in my house. 1% of me is like, there should not be another woman in this house that I live in with Tina. That is, whoa, no. That ain't gonna fly. If Tina turns that corner right now, what? Okay, so let's just put that aside. There's another woman in the house that's occupied by my girlfriend. So I get up out of my office chair and dart toward this woman. I don't know why. It's more instinct than conscious. Because she turns and gives her back to me. After she can get to the door, she gives her back to me and darts around the corner.
Mm.
I give chase. And of course, as I get around the corner, she's gone.
Mm.
I keep giving chase, but I go into our bedroom, our master bedroom, and go into the bathroom. Not because I think she went in there. I don't know why I did. I think I did to tell Tina. And Tina seeing the look on my face, because I walk up to Tina like a kid walks up to mommy and daddy and like there's a monster under the bed.
Yeah.
That's what I did when I walked up to Tina. Because Tina, like, she saw the look on my face, like, what's wrong? I'm like, I saw it. And she's like, you saw what? What are you talking about? I said, no, I saw it. I saw, there was a woman standing in my doorway. She turned the light on. Tina, I saw it. I didn't say I saw her. I said, I saw it. And Tina, what? Like, no, Tina, I was typing on my computer. Light went off. I heard a click. And I turned around. I was ready to admonish you for trying to prank me. And there was a woman standing at the door. I saw it. And I remember going to bed that night and talking to Tina, talking her ears off, like, is that what's behind all this stuff? You know, because up until now, we didn't have a face to it. But this woman I saw, she looked very tired. She looked very sad, but she looked very mischievous. She had a level of mischievous on her face that I did capture. Because up until now, we both have had lights go off and on while we're in the room all the time. I tell people in my book, the Poltergeist doesn't need to turn the lights off physically like the Gray Lady did. Mm. They do it. They can do it in other means, in other methods. This was done to where I think they wanted me to see her.
Mm.
She wanted me to see, because there was a click. Now, this is another thing that the paranormal community is going to have to study, is because I heard the click.
Yeah.
My ears picked up that. Those who study sound and how the physics and the mechanics of sound waves and how sound works and resonates and moves from point A to point B, meaning our eardrums and whatnot, will tell you the laws of physics, how that is. It's air. There's all kind of things involved in that. There was a click noise. So there was a physical. That's a physical break in our barrier, in our reality. And I heard that.
Yeah.
And I saw a full-bodied woman standing there at the time, and then she was gone. Poof, she's gone. You know, and she was all gray. She was all gray. And going back to other poltergeist cases of similar sightings, it fits it to the T.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to, not then, but later on, I started seeing the similarities that travel throughout centuries and ages with poltergeist cases. Like, oh yeah, apparition sighting, yeah, that's. Yeah, those are in the rarest and extremes of cases, but it's not unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, full body. The jury's still out on that or what that means. You know, some report white, and as you know, there's going to be a eventual white apparition sighting as well.
Yeah. Were you Would you think, looking back, Keith, you were more surprised? I would suspect that perhaps you and Tina were under the impression that, as you mentioned in the book, and some of the things that were going on, you presumed you'd got a child ghost. So do you think that's what shocked you as much to see it? Because this is the other aspect of this incident as well, Keith, and I'm sure you've heard people say, oh, well, perhaps it was a trick of the light. At least they're not saying it's a raccoon this time, Keith. It was a trick of the light. Maybe you were tired. The fact that you can describe this woman's facial features to the level that you can and what she was doing clearly shows you were watching this spirit, spectre, whatever you want to call it, for a considerable length of time to be able to take in and analyse everything that you were looking at. So the fact that it was a grey lady, do you think that's when you thought, we've no idea what's going on here now? Because I would have presumed you guys would just be thinking, well, it's the ghost of a child.
At first, we thought it was a child ghost. We took the kid cough, kid toys, and like, okay, it's a child ghost. And I think that was more for our psyche than actual having proof that it was. It's easier for our brains to live if we're going to live here. Oh, it's a child ghost. Hey, you know, what's a child going to do? It stopped for me being a child ghost, I would probably say soon after, number one, the gray lady sighting.
Yeah.
And soon after, where the activities start becoming more malevolent.
Mm.
And then as I start reading more of the trickster spirit of maybe they want us to think they're child ghosts.
Mm.
Maybe that's, you know, a game they play. And I shouldn't assume, if I assume to the point to where I'm going to be ignoring other instances, it might be a detriment. So when I saw the gray lady, I wrestled in myself was, and I asked Tina the question many a nights when going to bed, is the gray lady the one doing everything in the house?
Mm.
And I said, Tina, is she responsible with kid cough, plant levitating? And my answer, honestly, Paul, was no.
Yeah.
I said, Tina, I think there are more than one spirit in the house.
Mm.
And Tina, we did not like to have this conversation.
Yes.
Tina will sometimes brush away from it because we didn't, that just quadruples our problem.
Mm.
You know, what do you mean? We got one ghost, Keith. Don't be bringing five more in here. And I was just like, no, but if you just hear me out, Tina, I think we have, because from the short amount of time that I saw the gray lady, and I know nothing about gray ladies or ghosts or whatever, but from the short amount of time that I saw it, I was able to discern or deduce that it's not doing everything that we've experienced.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I said, yeah, I really don't know. But I can tell you all the things that are happening in the house, there's multiple things. I mean, keep in mind, you know, we've come home, open the front door from work, and we've heard pitter-patter noise running up the stairs. We have had chairs or plants dance across the kitchen floor as my back is turned while washing dishes. I was like, is all this stuff attributed to the gray lady? Is she doing all of this? I mean, what's her rationale? What is that? Or is she part of a, and I'm using the word team loosely, or is she just part of a team? And I don't know if they're all working in concert, but it seems to me some of the activity contradicts the other activity.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be working in unison, you know, but I have very little data to go, but that's what I'm picking up, the vibes I'm picking up. And I don't think there's more than one. So we stopped saying kid ghosts.
Yeah.
We really, I think, may have been the nail in the coffin with both the gray lady sighting and the house party.
Yes.
Housewarming party.
Yeah. I suppose with the house party, this is one of those things where clearly Tina had mentioned it to some of the guests there. But I suppose it's one of those, with the greatest respect, Keith, most people would probably go, oh, have you heard what Tina's saying is going on at their house? Oh, it's crazy. Can't be like that. I suppose it's quite frightening, but also it gave you both a great deal of satisfaction that you weren't just making it up. You weren't imagining things because everybody else gets as scared as you guys were at that point.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And I hope those who've read the book or who will read the book, there's two ways you can go with the housewarming part. I tell people when I wrote it, I was it's straight up truth, everything in it. But I hope it's to some, maybe not all, it was a moment of levity because we told everybody who's coming to our house party about our ghost problem. Nobody's coming here unaware. Now, whether you take it seriously, it's on you. But we've telling everybody, everybody has the same knowledge of what's happened so far already. So you can make the decision, do you want to come anyways? Now, my friends are and Tina's friends, similar career, similar backgrounds, very analytical, very problem solving, whatever. You know, we got a very eclectic group of friends. Some found it interesting. Some like they believed us. Nobody didn't believe it. They're like, we believe you. They just didn't believe us to the full extent. They're like, okay, you might have some ghosts or whatever, but you know, whatever.
Yeah,
we're still coming for you. You have this awesome barbecue, and y'all got free booze. We're coming. Ghosts be damned, we're coming. It's free booze. So, so we're like, all right, y'all, it's on you. And then you saw the book. Me and Tina, we monitor the activity days leading up to the party. If it would have been high and crazy, we was gonna pull the plug and cancel the party. But it was very quiet, docile, whatever. And we even said, you read the book, I said, we have some rules. We're going to monitor everybody. We're going to monitor the situation and report to each other if anything weird happens. But we're not going to look over our shoulder. We'll have a good time.
Yeah.
And people are coming in, and you notice the women, all of them, all the women, Tina's friends and mine, all came to her mostly about their hair being pulled.
Yeah.
You know, something's pulling their hair. Something is bumping their shoulder, bumping them, you know? And me, being the one who was doing the cooking, being the chef, I have a porch or a patio. I'm in and out, so I keep getting mysteriously locked out of my own house. And it became so noticeable that the guests started noticing because I got a handful of meat and whatever, and I'm banging on the door, and somebody has to let me in. Like, hey, why are you locking out of your house? Everybody's having a good time, and nobody's realizing, I don't know how y'all have in the UK, sliding doors, you can't lock yourself out.
Yeah.
There's no way. There's no way to lock yourself out of a sliding door.
Yeah, because it's on the inside, not the outside, isn't it?
It's on the outside. Okay. But nobody's putting two and two together. I just laugh it off. But the front door kept opening by itself, too. People kept finding the front door. Hey, Keith, your front door is open. Keith, your front door is open. Or the doorbell, and the doorbell would ring and nobody would be there. So we had a list of a finite amount of people were coming. So it was not like an open-ended party.
Yeah.
Everybody were in attendance. Sort of later in the afternoon, the doorbell would start ringing. Ding dong, ding dong. Go respond, and nobody's there. And our friend, hey, that's weird, kid, that's weird. And they were like, hey, we got a ghost. We told you got a ghost. Yeah, we got a ghost. And then the pulling of the hair. But me and Tina were relieved. We were like, okay, so they get some of the experience and they're, you know, firsthand. Nothing seems nefarious. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get them in, get them fed, get them drunk, and the night's over. We'll call this a win.
Yeah.
Tina, we'll call this a win. Half the people leave 12, 1 a.m., and Tina's best friend and her mom stay.
Mm-hmm.
And we're cleaning up the house, me and Tina, and they're talking, drinking coffee, whatever. And the plant gets thrown again, and Tina's friend was closest to it and had the best angle to see it from beginning to end. And my back was turned. Tina's back was definitely turned, but we all heard the crash. But her friend saw it. I saw it zoom by my peripheral.
Yeah.
And her friend, I remember her friend leaped up her camp. She leaped up off the couch, and she's like, "What was that?" And me and Tina had experienced that 20th millionth times. We're not really shocked.
Yeah.
And we're maybe a little bit complacent, like, oh, it's just whatever ghost being, whatever they do. And she looked at Tina like, girl, I told you our house was haunted. And she said, well, you didn't tell us that. And she said, yes, I did. I told you plants go flying and all that. But it's different when you see it with your own eyes. So Kim saw that.
Yeah.
And was just blown away. She's like, whoa. Like, she wasn't scared, like running for the hills.
Yeah.
She pulled out her iPhone and started talking to the spirit. She's like, oh, yeah, the ghost. Oh, you got to talk him out. And her mom, being from New Orleans,
yeah,
having a spiritual background, said, well, y'all got a ghost. Okay. All right. Well, no, let's take this through.
Hmm.
We'll pray. We'll talk them out of here, and hopefully that'll work. But you know, it was a sense of accomplishment for me and Tina. I mean, we knew this already.
Yeah.
But for other people to witness and have their own stories to tell, this adds to our credibility and to let us know we're not insane.
Yeah.
We're not attention seeking.
Hmm.
But it really sheds a lot of light to the poltergeist, it's because they chose to be active for the duration of the party and to increase their activity later that night to where Kim and Kim's mom saw the plant fly. Now, you know how this ends because you read the book where we all go into one room next door, the den room, and pray, and we're very sincere, and we all pray and hold hands and come back into the living room in the kitchen, which is only a few feet away, and see every kitchen cabinet door wide open, everything, and not one word or sound. You and I can go to the kitchen, open up all those kitchen cabinet doors, and not make a sound. And it happened just a few inches from where we were sitting down praying, and that blew Kim and her mom's mind, because I was sort of like, you know, the hunter shooting the silver bullet at the werewolf, and the werewolf just catching the silver bullet in his mouth and chewing it up and spitting it out.
Yeah.
That's the look of, that's the expression they had as they left our house was, okay, we're going to pray for you guys. All
right. Good luck. Bye.
Call me Monday. Tina, call me Monday.
Do you think, looking back, Keith, because obviously it's quite noticeable that it seems to have calmed down before the party. Do you think it did it on purpose, that it either lulled you into a false sense of security that, well, maybe we're over the worst of it, maybe it's just stopped as suddenly as it started, or now looking back and after everything happened? Because at the end of the day, what we've got to point out to people listening is, this is the first 6 months of you being in this house.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a lot of those stuff. I think poltergeist, all of them, including mine or ours, nothing is left to chance. Nothing is without a reason. There's multiple reasons. False security is definitely one. Making you believe something when it's really something else is another.
Mm-hmm.
One characteristic I notice about these spirits in the house is they do like to show out. They have a show out component to them, but it has to be on their terms. When they want to show out. Having a house full of friends who are in similar occupation and lifestyle as we were, couples, in my opinion, was just too good for them to pass up.
Mm.
These are people from all walks of life coming in to be merry and cheerful. And this also squashes, in my opinion, squashes the myth. I want people to understand there's a myth around poltergeist activity that the activity only has to erupt when there's turmoil or chaos or a level of dysfunction in the home. I mean, going back to the adolescent kid and child or whatever, or people always focus on, oh, is anybody depressed? Anybody suicidal? Anybody da-da-da-da-da? Anybody going through financial troubles? Anybody going through this and this and that? That could explain why you're having activity now. And there may be some truth to that. But there also is a flip side. In this case, proves the flip side that doesn't get much attention, in my opinion, was because me and Tina moved to the house. Obviously, we're not going through any financial turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're not financially constrained. Definitely not suicidal, whatever. Not having any relationship problems. She's moving in with me. We're moving in together. We're at the apex of our relationship.
Yep.
So there's that. We're cheer. We're happy. We're positive. This party wasn't a wake party. This was a housewarming party. Everybody was chipper, merry, happy-go-lucky, and the activity was very active. And everybody was affected, male and female.
Mm.
So it was not like the – I hate when people were dismissing our case was, well, no new house could be that active. Your house is built in 05. No, it's not been really lived in. What are you saying? Only old houses could be active? And that's what a lot of people told us. Same thing can be said about the mentality of the people living in this party, because you're right. We were glad, me and Tina, to get through the party. We thought we got through by the hair of our chinny chin chin. Mm-hmm. But then it threw the plant. And I believe it threw the plant because it wants to be known. It wasn't shy. It wasn't like, oh, that's what to everybody leave. We don't want to show everybody. But Kim and her mom saw that. Mm-hmm. And they wanted them to see that, you know. And it created another story, another layer, if you will, because Kim, to this day, can tell that story. She was there. That activity was very important, spoke in the will to this book. Mm-hmm. And, my coffee cup went missing, the green coffee cup that I let my friend drink that night that my mom gave me as a gift to move into Seattle in 2005. The spirits heard that conversation, and then the coffee was missing and went missing the next morning or stayed missing, has never been resurfaced. So you're right. It's very interesting that they saw that stuff and lived to tell about it, and we saw it and were sometimes secondary to it.
Mm-hmm. It's almost as like it's a grand finale for a bit as well, because it does seem to sort of chill out for a bit. Maybe it goes on a paranormal holiday for a bit, Keith. It's not really it doesn't exactly completely go away. There are still little things going on here and here and there. I mean, like you touched on earlier when you talked about the doors. I can't think of anything more unsettling, whether you're a man, a woman, a couple, a family, than waking up in the morning and finding out that your front and back doors are unlocked, which was happening at your place as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's horrific to imagine, because there's a level of vulnerability with poltergeists when you are sleeping in a house and all eyes are on you. And Tina being attacked while taking a shower or a bath, I being attacked while taking a shower, there's a level of vulnerability. Being attacked while in your bed, having sheets yanked off you while you're sleeping, having pillow yanked from under you while you're sleeping, having your feet messed with while you're sleeping, waking up and your front door open. The question is, how long was my door open? Was it open all night? Or was it just open when they realize he's awake, open the door? I have got doorbell rings at 5 in the morning, fast forward a little bit, and come downstairs and open up the front door. And my neighbor, I mean, the look on his and her face is just like they, not see the ghost, but like, what the heck, Keith? And they're like, hey, dude, every car door in your car is open. Your hood is open. You know, it's 5-4 a.m. in the morning. I just happen to be walking my dog, and I look over his shoulder, and he's right. And they seen Ghostbuster vans come and go from the house, so that the word is out around the neighborhood. Not Tina's house, if something's going on there.
Yes.
But that's in the house. What's this thing going on with your car outside your driveway? Mm. You know, while the alarms and horns blinking up and down, waking up the neighborhood some nights, some mornings, some nights, and you're not even in the car, Key. The brake lights are going off and on, and the car is not even, there's nobody in the car. And all I could tell that person, Mr. and Mrs. Neighbor, was, hey, thank you for letting me know. And walk to my car in my robe or whatever and close all the doors and shut the hood and the trunk and retreat back into the house and tell Tina. Call the priest. Call. Let them know that's something new we got to deal with, and we did. Mm-hmm. Hey, this has happened today. It's something new, and that would go on. That would be a new campaign. Okay, now's the car thing.
Yeah.
Okay. It just shocks me.
Yeah. Was this the same car that the keys had gone missing for?
Yeah. Same mm-hmm. car.
Well, at least you know same why they car. Stole them.
they got the key, and you know, it's me going to work for over a year and a half, finding my car truck open. Mm-hmm. As soon as I get in the car, I see the light on the dashboard because they have my keys, and like I said, they want you to be a participant, whether it's willingly or unwillingly, and I am, you're responding to things that are after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, I'm getting a doorbell ring at 5 in the morning. Who can be ringing my doorbell at 5 in the morning? It's my neighbor to let me know all my doors are open. My car is vulnerable. It's vulnerable to a passerby. It's vulnerable to somebody who might have never thought to break into a car. But if, hey, if I'm going to see a car with all the 5 doors open in the middle of the morning, I might be, it might be inviting me to break in. Or I walk by a house where the front door is open. That might be my invitation to go in and take a TV.
Yep.
So we wake it up and we see these things. And the alarm is not doing what the alarm was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't help but get scared or nervous. You're like, okay, where's this going? I mean, what, you trying to invite Mr. and Mrs. Jack the Ripper in while we're sleeping? Well, why are you opening windows?
I mean, as well, most people, when they deal with a haunting, Keith, it stops and starts at the threshold. I would imagine that when things start happening with your car or outside of the property, I suspect that was as unnerving as anything, because then you're thinking, well, is this following me when I leave the house?
Yeah, so, yeah, following, once again, new milestone, new layer, new component. Being followed by a poltergeist is a big deal.
Mm.
It's even more of a big deal when you have somebody like me and Tina who are totally oblivious to the paranormal. Our circumference of knowledge is very limited. We don't know where this is going. We don't know has the shoe dropped or is the shoe about to drop?
Mm.
Are we at the beginning, middle, or end of this? Because you're right. For now, the activity has been confined to the four walls of the house.
Mm.
That's the limit of my knowledge. I'm dealing with that. It's not easy to deal with. We're fighting that battle. We're losing horribly.
Mm.
Okay, but we're still in the game. We're still in the game. We're still here. It's a new level when you travel hundreds, if not thousands of miles, and put a few states in between you, between your house and where you're at. I travel on business, and the activity is in your hotel room with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not expecting it. It's like hitting the reset button all over again, because as long as I'm out the house, the Tina, every time she left, she's like, oh my God, we're out of the house. Okay. I can sort of let my hair down. I can sort of breathe a little bit.
Yeah.
I know nothing's going to go flying tonight. While I'm spending the night at Kim's house. Me, I'm in a hotel room. Ooh, I'm going to get some 8 hours sleep tonight. The lights are not going to go off and on. Da, 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 da. I'm good. Yeah. I got room service. I'm going to crack out a few work emails, and then I'm going to go to bed. We're going to yank some sheets off you. We're going to yank your pillow. We're here. And then that happens, and then you're like, whoa, they followed me. Now, our way of thinking is, wait a minute, how do they follow you?
Mm.
You know, when I say you follow me, I have a picture in my head of you physically following me. I can see you following me. You know, I go right, you go right. How are they following me? I had to go through, you know, I had to get in the cab from the house to the airport, check my luggage in, get in the ticket line, go to security, get my bags checked, get to my terminal, sit and wait, board the plane, it's crowded, I got people in front of me, behind me, everywhere, stewardess and all that. Where are they sitting?
Yeah.
You know, if you follow me to Florida, you get on the plane when I'm getting on. You know, you're trying to, without my knowledge, you're on the plane somewhere.
Yeah.
Like an assassin, like a movie. You're on the plane with me. Okay. You don't take a different flight. I get on the plane, the one after him. Well, that's 4 or 5 hours from now. You're going to lose them. No, you're on the plane with me.
Yeah.
Where are they at? Mm. On the plane, you know, there's no seat. The plane's sold out. You know?
Yeah.
I get to my hotel. Did they beat me at my hotel? Oh, we were waiting on you. We're here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we read your mind. We're here. Nice room, by the way. You know?
Had you packed it? That's the thing. Is it in your luggage, Keith?
Yeah, they didn't look. Hey, we're in your luggage. You packed us in. We jumped in. Make some room. You know, it's like, so that goes through my mind now as I'm dealing with sheets being yanked off the bed. And I'm like, okay, how do they, you know, follow me? Or follow Tina, or attack Tina away from the house, or me away from the house. Because that's a new level of activity But it's not unheard of. Mm. It's happened in other cases.
Yeah.
But it never ends good.
Yeah.
It doesn't end well, or it means the activity is getting worse or metastasizing. I don't know. But you're right. That did happen. That did happen. I was followed.
I suppose, as well, you're very fortunate, Keith. You can look back at this period of you and Tina's life, I suppose, with a dark sense of humour about what went off. Because I think when you read the book, often when people speak with experiences and people that have lived through these things, I think what they often forget in regards to people telling their stories and explaining what went off, people go, oh God, that's really frightening. And I don't think they think about the psychological and mental impact that it can have on a person. Because I would imagine for both you and Tina, any chance to get away from the house as often as possible, be it through work or for social reasons, would be a relief, because you would, as you jokingly refer to, I might finally be able to get a good night's sleep for once. And you can't escape it. It's like it doesn't want you to go. Wherever you go, it wants you to know it's there.
We're here. It's there. You have not escaped anything. We would create rules now. Tina would call me, hey, I'm off work, I'm on my way home. Are you off work on your way home? Sometimes, yes, I was. Sometimes I wasn't. So she would like, okay, well, I'm going to run errands, but I know you're close vicinity of the house, because we would definitely try to leave together or definitely try to arrive together. And when I would go on business, away on business, Tina would stay at her friend's, but I would be relieved to be out of the house for a few days or a week at a time. And I would thought it would be my time to catch up on sleep, relax, and look at this thing from a different perspective, sort of recharge. But they, meaning Mr. and Mrs. Poltergeist, because there is a psychological war component to this, they're trying to beat you down. And they want you to know, at least for now, there's no way you can go that we won't be with you.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure there's a phase within all this to where there was a point where they could not follow me. And then there's an element where the longer this goes on, the more powerful they get, they're going to be able to follow me. And the fact that they followed me lets me know they've gotten powerful to the point to where they can exist a long way from ground zero. You know, we always have this thing in our head, because I know paranormal teams told me this, and I kind of laughed at the idea of, well, the farther they get away from your house, the weaker they get. You know, your house is ground zero. That's their, they're not going to leave too far from ground zero. You know, I'm like, how do you know that? I mean, how do you know that? And then I have the proof when they throw stuff in my hotel room as equally as they throw it in my house. Don't look like they're kind of weak to me. I'm in Atlanta. You know how far Atlanta is from Seattle? I'm 3,000 miles from the Bothell house. And I don't think the fact that what's in my house or in my hotel room doesn't mean the house is now empty. There was always that battle between me and my rationale, Tina's rationale, and the paranormal teams and the churches of, well, if they followed you, does that mean the house is now empty and unattended? Or, going back to what I told you earlier, I think there's more than one. Or can they be at two places at the same time? Or a percentage followed you and the other ones still are in the house?
Yeah.
Because you have to remember, later on down the line, me and Tina are going to be attacked almost the same time, time zones notwithstanding, and she's going to be in the house and I'm going to be in the hotel.
Mm.
And they are going to cut the lines of communication between us two while this attack is being unfolded.
Mm.
Because when Tina was attacked today, Kim spent the night in the house. Kim and Tina were attacked.
Mm.
I was attacked in my hotel room. Neither one of us could reach the other person for about 12 hours
because
the phones went dead. Our cell phones. I mean, not dead. I mean, the phone is fully charged, but all my calls to Tina go into voicemail. All her calls and text messages to me are going to voicemail or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's not a problem with our phones. They have stepped in between. They've cut the communication, because when they open up the communication back up, these text messages and phone calls all of a sudden start coming in. They're late. All of a sudden my phone, I have a larger list of text messages from a timestamp from an earlier time, and vice versa. So they did that. And they were in two places, and that to me shows, oh, so that itself is a concerted effort. Y'all working in concert. Hit Tina with stuff, hit Keith with stuff. Just to use an analogy for people who may want to use pictures in your head, remember the end scene of Godfather,
yeah,
where Michael Corleone takes out all the four or five families.
Mm.
And he's at the church at the mass or whatever, and all the Godfather, everybody's getting hit. Da 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 da. Different locations. Tina's getting hit at the Bothell House. I'm getting hit in my hotel room.
Mm.
It just riddles the mind. It just riddles the mind.
Yeah. I mean, there was one incident early on that I wanted to touch on, Keith, because the thing about this is I could speak to you about this and your books for probably 20 hours, never mind two, mate. The first time that you have some kind of physical injury is this very odd incident, because the stairs in your house were split, weren't they? There was a sort of halfway landing point, so it was a pretty pedestrian staircase. It's, you know, we're not talking about a great big sweeping spiral staircase or anything. And I think you decided that you needed a drink, a refill or something, and you were coming downstairs. You were just taking your time coming down, and then the next thing you remember is you're lying at the bottom, at the foot of the stairs, in agony.
Yeah, that was 2014, January 2nd. And what's interesting about that is, people don't know this, is the activity finally died down the end of 2012. You know, one of the things about Poltergeist is they tell you the activity, be it long or short term, eventually dies down. There's some sort of a tapering off of it, if you will. And we saw that right at the time we were about ready to throw in the towel. And we thought, we had dodged a bullet, to use that metaphor, of, okay, we won. And as the activity died down, I could never tell what we did to make it die down, but I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. I'll take it. And we did. So we went through 2013, relatively no activity. Now, I put an asterisk next to that because you have to define the word activity. There are always elements, in my opinion, that are still happening, but it's not at the level that we experienced prior. There's little nuanced things that have happened, but you can really easily shrug those off. Now, the reason why I'm laying that foundation before the staircase, because I think they're related. January 2nd, 2014, right, I was coming downstairs for a refill, and there's the landing, and there's a midway landing, so of a staircase, very pedestrian, got rails. So I came down, got to the midway landing, touched the step, boom, I'm down to the floor, 12, 13, 14 steps below, bam, on the floor, on my back, and hurt my knee, right knee, bad. I knew it was a bad fall. When I fell and landed, I knew it was a bad fall. I wasn't in it, like, excruciating pain, but I was in serious pain in my knee, and I knew it was bad. And Tina come running over there, and she thought I was playing at first, but she saw my condition, and she helped me back upstairs. And long story short, in that regard, yeah, I had tore my right patella tendon clean off, and had to require surgery to reattach it, to repair it. And then I'm now diagnosed with 2 months of physical therapy. So keep it understood, from a Poltergeist vantage point, lovely, salivating at the mouth, because now I am nearly bedridden,
mm-hmm.
definitely restricted to the upstairs area, because I can't work. I can't leave the house. I can't drive. My knee has to stay straight after surgery for 2 weeks. I can't bend it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if I could, I couldn't, because of atrophy. So I am now confined to the upstairs. Tina leaves to go to work, and I'm not going to be moving around the house with just me. I can fall down and make the situation worse, break my neck. So I'm definitely not leaving the upstairs, definitely not leaving the room. But I'm in immense pain. I just had surgery. I'm taking pain meds. I'm in immense pain, excruciating pain. But I'm watching TV from bed, so life's not too bad. But as I'm dozing in and out of sleep, I'm hearing noises in the house that would suggest that somebody is home.
Mm.
And the noises are coming from downstairs. I hear a noise. I turn the volume down on the TV so I can hear the noise clearer. And it sounds like somebody's rummaging through the kitchen. I kid you not.
Ooh.
It sounds like somebody's unloading, loading dishwasher, going to the cupboards. To the point to where I scream out, "Tina, are you home?"
Mm-hmm.
No answer. I text Tina, "Hey, get her word about, oh yeah, she's at work. All right." I hobble out of bed, grab my crutches, kind of hobble to the doorway of the bedroom, look over the landing wall, and the noise stops. I call out, nothing. I look at the doors. I look at the alarm. Remember, we still got the alarm. Nothing, yep. nothing nefarious there. Hop back into bed. Noise resumes later. This goes on for days. Oof. Now, also while sleeping in bed, I'm hearing scratches on the headboard.
Yeah.
Like a cat trying to get into a room that, you know, your door is closed. And sometimes a cat will scratch the door. Hey, let me in.
Yep.
I'm hearing that on the headboard, and that's weird. That has never happened yet before. So that's new.
Yeah.
Also, what I'm hearing and feeling is somebody walking in the hallway right outside my doorway, coming and going from room to room, closing doors. Close, open. To the point again, Tina, are you home? Text Tina. Tina? ? No key. So that, and this is all within days or weeks after my surgery, and me and Tina have a conversation about the day she come home from work. I would tell her, hey, I'm hearing noises that I've never heard before. But you have to understand, prior to this, I wouldn't even be home at all. I'd be at work. I'm not hearing noises because I'm home all the time. And I'm wondering, is this what it sounds like when we're not in the house? Because remember, we come home some days after 8 hours of work, and we hear pitter-patter noises as we open the front door and walk in. It feels like we interrupted something. I come through the front door, and it feels like five kids are darting up the stairs.
Yeah, getting out of the way.
Like we've interrupted something. Like, whoa, he came home early. So now I'm looking at Tina. I'm like, you know, I don't think they're gone. I don't think they left. They're like, they left. They're gone. We don't want to dwell on it. We don't talk about it. And I'm like, no, I think something's here. I think it just seems weird. I don't know, Tina. I don't know. And the day, I don't know, I think it was late March, early April. I think it was a Sunday night when this is like the plant thing where they're going to help us realize we're back. Like, we're back. And there's no leaving. There's no plant this time. There's no, well, let's break them in slowly and surely. No. We're now a year, almost 2 years into the home. We got bigger furniture now. The rooms are now all equipped with all the furniture that they need, even the hallway. And we're sleeping. And I wake up and I look and my ceiling fan is squeaking.
Oh.
Doing that squeak thing.
Yeah.
Now, we've had activity for a little over a year.
Mm.
And so far, besides the squeaking, okay, I get up, Tina, let Tina sleep, because I feel a level of heaviness in the room, like where all eyes are watching us or me.
Mm.
I hobble downstairs, and I remember Tina had some sage. Not the sage you and I would buy at a botanical store for smudging or whatever. She was cooking with it.
Yeah.
She had the green stuff.
Yeah.
I got it out of the refrigerator, out of the vegetable drawer, and I put it on a cookie sheet, and I put it in the oven on broil and let it reduce down to what sage looks like when you are smudging. And I put that burnt sage, as it was smoldering, on a saucer, and I started walking around every room smudging with that sage. To where Tina woke up, because Tina could smell the sage. She said, hey, what are you doing? we haven't done this in a while. What are you doing? I don't feel right. Something. It's not feeling right, Tina. I don't feel it. I'm just letting them know. I'm on to you. And I was. And I set the remaining of the smudged sage on the bookshelf, the infamous hallway bookshelf, and let it smolder itself out and went back to bed. A few minutes later, I heard a loud crash. Ching, ching, ching. Tina and I walk up. We dart to the deal, to the noise.
Mm.
The saucer is obliterated on the other side of the hallway.
Oh.
Sage and all that's obliterated. I pick it up and sweep it up and da-da-da-da-da. Like, oh, man, that's not good. Because that in itself, they're back. That's a paranormal act. That, okay, I could confirm my suspicions. Leave something over here. It is up over here, a million pieces. Okay. Wow, that has not happened. We have not seen that in over a year, 2 years. This is crazy. We go back to bed, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Try to. Tina, I'm looking at the ceiling fan that's still squeaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I read, I forgot what webpage I read it on, when it said, when these things leave, sometimes they leave and never resurface, high five yourself. That's good. Count your blessings.
Yep.
They never come back. If they come back, it's always, and they say sometimes, it's always worse the second time around. And I remember I was playing that in my head over and over that night. And remember, I'm still thinking about the fall. I'm like, because the fall was always weird to me. Like, it was a weird fall. It was weird. It was the fall of domino effect.
Yeah.
Did they get something out of that fall, that injury? Later that night, as my eyes were about to close, we heard another loud crash. Boom, boom, boom. We rushed out to the hallway. This armoire that Tina bought, about 300 pounds, weighs about 300 pounds. It took three of us to carry it upstairs. Heavy thing, bulky. Was leaning on the floor, leaning on the wall, and left a huge gash in the wall because it had been flown. And it's tip-sided, and it's horrible. I couldn't have moved it through that thing. And Tina looks at it. I look at it. And the look of defeat or their back, or it's about to get really bad. And it was. And I remember looking at Tina. Tina dropped her shoulders and went back to the bedroom, sat on the bed, and just started bawling, crying. She just, because we knew, she knew, and we knew it's always worse, or we've been told it's going to be worse. And if they're back, whoa, this armoire was an indicator. We're back. And every day from after that day, they picked up where they left off. And that's, like I said, the things that this case is known for, that's when those things started happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got fire. Fire is now one of the spirits that causes the spontaneous fires, that has the ability, has been called, you know.
Yeah.
And we, and me and Tina, oh, man, we have no idea the storm that's about to come.
Yeah. Well, I have to say something, Keith. As I jokingly said earlier, I could talk to you for 20 hours. I'm going to have to ask you to come back at some point so we can continue this conversation, Keith, because, I mean,
yes,
we've barely scratched the surface, really.
Oh, yeah, we are. Oh, yeah, barely. Yeah, like I said, barely. We just got to 2014, just now.
Yeah.
We're now in 2014, which, as you know,
the calm before the storm. So, Keith, it is, as I said at the beginning, one of the most remarkable cases I've read. I've heard you speak about it before. You're someone I've wanted to have on the show for such a long time. And I'm sure, both for my personal interest and the listeners, that we're going to have you back for part two. Because I think if we leave it on this cliffhanger, obviously anybody who's not read the book's going to be sort of shouting, saying, no, don't go. But I think it's always good to keep people wanting more. I just want to say thank you so much for both writing the book and being as candid and as honest about everything that you guys went through. Where can everybody get a hold of a copy of the book, Keith? Follow you online and keep up to date.
Yeah, well, once again, like I said, thanks for having me. I love the back and forth. I'm open to coming back for a part two, so feel free to reach out for me for that. We'll get to the meat and potatoes of the latter. People can find the books, three books in all, on Amazon in the UK or anywhere in the world for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
The Bothell Hell House, or just type in Keith Linder. There's both Kindle and paperback version.
Yep.
You can find that. You can also type in Keith Linder on YouTube and get brought to my YouTube videos and channels where some of this stuff is located, the video.
Yep.
It'll blow your mind.
Mm.
So, yeah, those are the three, the two places I would recommend people. The books are very interactive in it, that they have links to the evidence captured, not by me, but from paranormal teams, majority coming out of Europe, out of the UK, who are familiar with the case. A lot of organizations are in the UK. So, yeah, I would tell your listeners to start with the books. And, let's get me back and let's talk about the wall writings. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fire.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church is going to arrive on the scene.
Yeah.
Ghost adventures are going to arrive on the scene. Parapsychologist Steve Mara and others are going to be arriving. It's going to be, a lot of people descending on the Bothell House. And Keith and Tina are going to be in the middle of it. So, yeah.
Fabulous. It's been an absolute pleasure to finally speak to you. Thank you for your humour, your good nature, and your conversation, Keith. You have not disappointed during our chat.
Oh, yeah,
anytime. And I will hold you to that. We will get you on sooner rather than later. So we'll arrange that off air. And I just want to say thank you so much. I'll put links to everything in the show notes so people can track your books down and also follow your YouTube channels and everything like that. And I just want to say thank you so much for spending so much time talking to me about just the beginning.
Yeah, just the beginning. Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. Thank you.